You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Earlier this year, we dove into a Supreme Court case centering on the popular and controversial weed killer Roundup, following more than 100,000 lawsuits accusing its manufacturer, Monsanto, which is now owned by Bayer, of failing to include a cancer warning label on the product. At the heart of this dispute is whether a key ingredient, called glyphosate, causes cancer. In 2015, the World Health Organization deemed glyphosate as probably carcinogenic to humans, concluding that there was strong evidence it had the ability to damage the genetic information of a cell, which can cause mutations. The company disputes that claim that the herbicide causes cancers like non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and the EPA, a federal agency, has approved its use without a cancer warning label. 3 weeks ago, the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in favor of Monsanto, and that decision has the possibility to have ripple effects here in California. Back in April, we featured an investigation by Mother Jones and the radio show Reveal that looked into the U.S. Forestry Department's plan to spray roughly 75,000 acres of California public forest land with glyphosate. Nate Halverson is the reporter who conducted that deep dive, and he's here today to update us on his reporting and the ruling. Welcome back to Insight.
Vicky, thanks so much for having me back.
So before we dive into this ruling that happened last month, just remind us about your original reporting earlier this year, which you discovered about the U.S. Forest Service's fire recovery plan for California.
Yeah. I live in San Francisco, but I have a little rustic cabin in the middle of nowhere up in Northeast California. And that was very close to where the Dixie and the Park fire had burned through. And so I got a notice from the U.S. Forest Service that they were going to be doing all this, what I think most people deem great work, thinning out the forest, prescribed fires. But buried in there was the word herbicides. And so I said, wait, what herbicides are they going to be spraying in the forests in Lassen National Forest? And I dug into it, and it turned out that glyphosate, you know, also known kind of by its brand name Roundup, was one of the herbicides. And so I began looking into seeing if that was safe and why they said it was safe and how much they were going to use and if this was a one-off or if this was part of a growing trend. And the answer was it's a massively growing trend. It's essentially quintupled in the last couple decades with rapid rises recently in the wake of these massive mega fires and that the science underpinning its safety has very much come into question. And there's a lot of critical, independent, peer-reviewed studies that have come out that have shown that this might not be a chemical that people want in their environment or in their lives, and that the regulations that we have on the book, including those that the Forest Service used, were relying on studies that we now know were ghostwritten by Monsanto, something that internally the EPA called research misconduct, although the EPA sat on that information.
Okay. Why is glyphosate a desirable product or ingredient to use for fire recovery?
Yeah, it's really effective to help regrow conifer trees. And conifer trees are those that have pine needles. It's the ones that the timber industry uses and harvests. And the reason it's effective is after a fire, a lot of other plants come back. Bushes, wildflowers, you know, all of the green that you can sort of imagine reemerging in spring can really take root for years. And the conifers can take a long time to push through that process. And some say, given climate change and other factors, the conifers might not ever come back at the thickness or the density that we've seen. And so glyphosate is a way to go through and kill all of that other plant life. They call it total vegetation management. And you allow for those, they'll go back and they'll replant the little baby saplings, the conifers, and all of the, with all the other plants dead, all of the soil nutrients, the moisture, the sunlight goes back to those conifers. And they're able to regrow these forests at the density that many national forest plans require for future timber harvest. So this effort is really about future timber harvest and the economies of the Forest Service. You know, keep in mind the Forest Service lives under the USDA. So this is treated as an agricultural operation.
It's been a couple months since your documentary and the investigation. What has been the reaction to your reporting?
Well, there's been public reaction and there's been congressional reaction. You know, on the public side, people didn't know about it. I didn't know about it. I live up there and I'm an investigative journalist and I'm a super nerd and I love digging into things and I had no idea. And that was kind of the case for other people. And so people in my area, but especially down around Lake Tahoe, people have gotten very agitated and they've gotten very organized. And they've been holding meetings and rallies and opposition. There is now a change.org petition with approaching 40,000 signatures calling for the herbicides to not be used in the Caldor fire restoration, which is about 75,000 acres of reforestation within the basin and outside the basin. And so people have gotten very politically active.
I mean, so is that spraying, has that been put on hold in the Tahoe area or is that still moving forward?
Yeah, so initially reports were coming out that it was on hold. And so some of the big NGOs up there like Keep Tahoe Blue were saying that the Caldor Fire Restoration Project, you know, had been on hold and put on hold until 2028 or wasn't going to start till 2028. And that just didn't add up for what I was seeing in the Forest Service's own documents. And so I went out there. I had gotten some maps online that the Forest Service had recently put out saying where they had sprayed and where they were planning to spray in the Caldor fire. And they had. I went out there and you could see it. They had already started spraying glyphosate and Roundup literally right along side ski runs at Sierra Tahoe, for instance, where the Caldor fire had ripped through and had replanted baby conifers. So it has begun in the Caldor Fire Restoration Project. And I think some of the confusion was that inside the basin itself, where they're talking about a much smaller area of reforestation, only about 3,500 acres of that 7,500, the Forest Service told me that they haven't postponed it. They just never planned to start until 2028. But this is part of the problem is that the Forest Service has not been clear with how they're going to roll this out. And so there is nowhere in their documentation saying we're going to roll it out here and this time. And in fact, even the stuff that I went to go look at, they didn't put those maps out until a year after they had already done the spraying.
Oh, wow. Okay, so now let's focus on Congress. I mean, what kind of reaction at the congressional level did you receive from your reporting?
Yeah, so Shelley Pingree, a congresswoman from Maine, and Jared Hoffman here from the Bay Area, who sit and oversee the Forest Service, sent a letter basically saying, we had no idea you all were doing this. How much are you doing it? What alternatives have you looked at instead of doing this? And we want you to create a national database of all of the places around the country where you're proposing to use herbicides at this scale in the national forest system.
So you've gotten a wealth of response, both from the general public and from lawmakers from your investigation. It's only been a couple months. When you joined us back in April, we also got some comments as well from listeners. One was described as a forester and was kind of critical of the segment and the reporting. He believes as a forester that the persistence of glyphosate in the environment is small. So what exactly is persistence? And I guess what kind of criticism or pushback did you receive from your reporting and your investigation?
Yeah, it's a great comment. And it really strikes at the heart of the uncertainty around the science of glyphosate. And let me give you two examples. One, foresters like the commenter you just mentioned will often cite a 2020 report that says the half-life of glyphosate in soil is about 30 days. And then there is another study from 2018, also peer-reviewed and published, that says it can be years. And oftentimes that, and that's looking across a huge spectrum of the EU. So they're taking samples from all across the EU in different soil types and different temperature types. And I mentioned temperature and soil because, you know, these are actually pretty complex systems and how quickly it breaks down from glyphosate into another product called AMPA, which also science has shown has real health concerns. So it's breaking down into a compound that also has health concerns. But this is where things get even more confounding, is that 2020 study that I said, that I mentioned, that says it only has a half-life of 30 days that foresters often cite. The very first reference in that study that it's referring to, another peer-reviewed, is a document written by somebody who we now know was secretly being paid by Monsanto. It was a Monsanto orchestrated. In fact, the emails that came out in litigation, Monsanto said that essentially they would write the report and that scientists would just sign their name to it. And that is the first reference in the paper that says it only lasts 30 days. And notably, it references that after the information about this ghostwriting had already come out. So this scientist, who does industry work, who published the 30-day half-life, published this already knowing that this science was compromised.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, there is just a wealth of, I guess, debate and also, as you say, uncertainty about this. And of course, you dove into the ghostwriting that was taking place as well. You also mentioned at the top alternatives to glyphosate briefly. What alternatives exist if glyphosate didn't exist? Because this forester also said that the alternatives that they had come in contact with are pretty much infeasible. Are there actually feasible alternatives?
That's such a fantastic question, because I see that also getting posted and foresters saying that. The reality is that the Forest Service's own reports say it is feasible to reforest without glyphosate. It just costs three times as much. So what we're talking about here is that glyphosate is effective and it appears to be the cheapest way to do it. But you could do it without glyphosate, according to the Forest Service, and the province of Quebec, Canada, is one of the largest timber producers in North America, and they outlawed glyphosate use in forestry 25 years ago, and so they have a profitable, effective reforestation plan without glyphosate. So you have the Forest Service itself saying, yeah, we can reforest; it'll just cost three times as much, and you have the province of Quebec producing profitable timber without using it.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with reporter Nate Halverson about his investigation into the widespread use of glyphosate, that's a key ingredient in the controversial and popular weed killer Roundup, across California forests ravaged by wildfire, and the recent Supreme Court ruling that found that the maker of Roundup, Monsanto, could not be held liable for failing to warn consumers about the potential cancer risk of exposure. So let's just dive into this ruling. It was 3 weeks ago. They ruled in favor of Monsanto. Did that ruling surprise you?
I would say not really. I mean, I don't think I would have been surprised either way. But I think the law, it's important to understand that the Supreme Court was not ruling on the safety of glyphosate. The Supreme Court was ruling on what the law called FIFRA, that Congress passed, that says the EPA has sole purview of putting labels on pesticides, on herbicides. And the Supreme Court said that these state lawsuits were in effect requiring Monsanto to put an additional label that would mean that the states were controlling labeling. And that FIFRA says, no, only the EPA can do that. And so the law was very specifically looking at just who is authorized to who can authorize or require a label. And the Supreme Court ruled that states cannot, that only the EPA can.
It was also interesting that, the ruling was 7-2. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, Justice Neil Gorsuch, they were the dissenting votes. This wasn't a ruling that fell along party lines. Was that interesting to you?
Yeah. It just speaks to the trend that I've already seen while reporting on this story. I've been a reporter for a long time now. And one of the things that have brought me joy in this otherwise sometimes dismal story is that I'm seeing people across party lines come together, either in opposition to glyphosate or in support of glyphosate. It really has not broken down on these hyper-partisan lines that we've all been living in America for a long time now. It really has crossed political lines, and that's just kind of fun to see. you know, because we're in an active debate, a public debate. It's like watching a healthy democracy function.
Right. I mean, and if you're one of the thousands of lawsuits out there, what does this ruling mean for current and past litigation against Monsanto?
Yeah, I think TBD. Bayer thinks that it means that current trials that are based on state labeling laws or cases that are in appeal based on state labeling laws are going to get squashed. And it's important to note that, you know, I was mentioning this ghostwriting and how we know that, you know, this 30-day half-life study's first reference is a study we know was, you know, ghostwritten or the scientists were paid by Monsanto. We know that because of these lawsuits. We know that, and that's really critical information to see how the regulatory process was hijacked by a corporation. And the one thing I'll just throw in here is that in the 7-2 ruling, it wasn't so much that they sided with saying FIFRA only requires one, you know, only the EPA can put the label on it. It was actually smaller points that that was made in that ruling. And that was that the appropriate recourse for this man, John Darnell, who developed non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, would have been to reach out to the EPA and to let them know, you know, and that the EPA has adequate resources for doing these types of review. But what we've seen is that the budget for the EPA has been slashed over and over. It's not capable of doing it's increasingly not capable of doing its own research, which means it relies on industry to tell it whether or not these products are safe. And the EPA determined that glyphosate in 2020, it determined glyphosate was safe when used as directed. That was challenged by labor groups and environmental groups. And the Ninth Circuit looked at the EPA's ruling and overturned it and said, you cannot say based on this what you've presented here that it doesn't cause cancer. In fact, the majority of cases you cite in the review shows that it causes at least a somewhat degree increased risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so they vacated. So the ruling that we currently have from the EPA saying that this is safe is from 1993.
Hmm. So is there any indication that the EPA may require a cancer warning label on Roundup?
Well, they're currently reviewing it because the Ninth Circuit vacated their previous determination in 2020. They are maybe going to come out with this year. What we saw during the previous Trump administration via the lawsuits was that the chemical companies, Monsanto, was being told that the Trump administration, quote, had their back, and they shouldn't expect any regulatory issues with them. And that's largely what we've seen from this current administration's EPA, is that they are rolling back protections on pesticides. So despite their commitment or their promises to MAHA, to Make America Healthy Again base, this administration is rolling back regulations that had removed some concerning chemicals from everyday life.
Yeah, that puts that movement at odds with the Trump administration. I mean, have you heard of people within that movement, like leaders within the movement, speaking out about this?
Absolutely. The leaders of that movement have come out and said that this could cost the Republicans the midterm, that they're going to switch their vote if Trump continues to support glyphosate. It's a reminder, he put out an executive order both bolstering domestic production of glyphosate and providing it some additional legal liabilities from lawsuits. So they've been staunch advocates of it, and their base is saying, if you don't stop or you don't reverse course, we're not going to vote for Republicans in the midterms.
Mm. Finally, Nate, I mean, we're talking about Roundup, but does this ruling in the Supreme Court have wider impacts, wider potential implications? Maybe like, will it be harder to sue companies?
Yeah, it's a great question for a legal scholar or an expert. My ruling, reading around it, is they're basically saying that the EPA is the only one that can put these types of labeling, safety labelings on these types of products, pesticides, herbicides, and that states cannot, which means that we are all now at We are all EPA is our last, it is the only agency that can properly review and tell us if things are safe. And just for instance, the Ninth Circuit overturning the glyphosate ruling is a strong indicator that the public should be questioning whether or not that is adequate, and whether that's going to make them feel safe. Especially, I've read the Ninth Circuit's opinion and ruling when they overturned it. It was really harsh. They had some, you know, they were really harsh with, they said that the EPA was putting human health at risk with that determination. And that is the only industry right now that can warn us and allow lawsuits to go forward if companies don't follow that label.
Nate, thank you so much for stopping by.
Vicky, thanks for having me.
Nate Halvorsen is a senior reporter and producer for the radio show and podcast Reveal. We've been talking about his investigation into the widespread use of glyphosate. That's a key ingredient in the popular and controversial weed killer Roundup across California forests ravaged by wildfire, and the recent Supreme Court ruling that found that the maker of Roundup, Monsanto, could not be held liable for failing to warn consumers about the potential cancer risks of exposure. We have links to Nate's reporting on our website. Still ahead, when heading to the ballet or other dance performances, one might expect a venue indoors, but we're going to learn about a festival lakeside with Tahoe as a backdrop. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.